Oh, yes. Alex, there's a bit of feedback coming from that speaker through, from that microphone through these speakers. Is that just an adjustment, maybe?
Put it back a bit, maybe.
Yeah, it might be just too close or something, isn't it?
It's quite ready.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right, so let's move on now to the next submitter for Midknow Wilding Trees Charitable Trust, Richard Bowman. Welcome, Richard. We've caught up on a bit of time, so, well, we've made a bit of time, so you're under no time constraints at all, so
thank you.
Take your time. We'll just check the speaker as you speak to make sure it's adjusted.
Can you, is that reducing the feedback?
It is.
Yep.
It's good.
Okay.
Yep.
Right, well, my name is Richard Bowman, and I am here representing the Midknow Wilding Trees Charitable Trust, of which I'm a trustee, and I took on that role in April of last year. The trust is welcomes the opportunity to submit to the proposed regional pest management plan. The trust, by way of background, was formed in about 2006 with the aim of protecting special values in our high country with a in Southland, with a focus on wilding tree management at Midknow, where there was a major problem starting to emerge with trees that were planted 60 years ago, which were starting to spread across the landscape. And of course, these trees are no respect of any boundaries, so threatened to spread over a very large area of northeast and south. It's difficult to point out exactly where Midknow is, but people will know. It's just to the north of Lumsden. So the trust has been going for over 10 years now, and it has worked with various agencies, particularly with Environment Southland, with Department of Conservation, with Land Information New Zealand, and with Ministry of Primary Industries to undertake a major pest control or wilding tree control program at Midknow. And I believe to date it's probably spent in excess of $10 million on that, $8 million on that project. It's a substantial project, and it's probably got another 10 years before the infected areas can be handed back to respective landowners to take charge. In other words, remove the trees, remove the seed sources, and put the land back into a state where the actual landowners can manage that land sustainably under the regional pest management plan, because those biosecurity rules will be critical in the future to ensure that landowners have an obligation to keep their properties clear of wilding trees, and that becomes part of their routine land management program on whatever property they've got, whether it be Department of Conservation or it be a private landowner or whatever. So that's the sort of background that to the trust. Now, there are two classes of pests really that have been included in the proposed plan. And the first two are Pinus contorta and Pinus bugo. Now, those two trees were planted at Midknow from the 1950s through to the 1970s in the belief that they would prevent soil erosion on that high and quite highly erodible land. And that was against the wishes really of the farming community there, who realised that those trees would cause a problem in the long run, and they have. So those two species were planted because they're very tough trees. They were able to survive at altitude, very harsh conditions, but they also have the ability to spread very widely, particularly Pinus contorta, because it cones quite young, can produce seed at the age of 5 years, and at these forms very small light seeds which can be spread very large distances in wind events. And of course, Midknow is a very windy area, it's very prone to wind, and so what has happened is that the seed produced by those trees has moved, in some cases, kilometres and tens of kilometres from where they originally planted, and threatens a big area of land. Now, the trust program effectively has been built around the current regional pest management strategy, where Pinus contora and Pinus bugo were declared effectively as total control pest plants. And in this version of, or this proposal, there's been a change. They've been categorised as pests for progressive containment, which means that it's not intended to eradicate them, but it's to progressively reduce their extent over the region. And the Trust has looked at that quite carefully and sees that this change is okay. It can live with that change from an eradication essentially to a progressive containment approach. And it's realistic. So we are supportive of that change. And that will be over the duration of the plan that the geographic extent of Contorta and Mountain Pine will be reduced. And the rules, Rule 14 in particular, there's a slight change there whereby under the total control rule, if you had Contorta on your land, then you're obliged to remove it without request or warning. Under this new proposed rule, if you have those two species on your land and you are issued with a notice of direction, then you are required to remove them. So it's a subtle change. It actually puts a little bit more onus on the council as the pest management agency to carry out inspections and to issue notices of direction. But it's an effective strategy because I know it's worked quite effectively in, for example, the urban gorse and broom areas of Invercargill, where there have been total bans. That's been an effective strategy. It just requires a bit more work on the part of the pest management agency. So the Trust are happy with that, and that supports what the current program is doing, because we're only concerned with those two species of wild and conifer at Mid Dome, and it effectively carries on the existing arrangement. It's slightly changed, but we believe it will be quite effective. So the Trust is very thankful to the Council for continuing to support its objective of removing the wild and conifers at Mid Dome and the land that it threatens. We would just ask, though, that when the Council does its long-term plan, that it ensures that it makes provision to undertake any additional work that is created by the changes in the status of the pest, and particularly the need to inspect and to work with landowners, and if necessary, to carry out compliance action. Because that's very important to the Trust in the sense that it needs to have some regulatory bottom lines. If for some reason there's a problem with the landowner, that there are some teeth there, and if the landowner is putting the rest of the program at jeopardy, then those rules can be brought into play. Not at the beginning but certainly it's going to be a backstop thing, so it's very important to have that. So that's really that's the status quo part of what the Trust is doing, but the Trust is also very concerned about the risk posed by other species in Southland, particularly by commercial species like Douglas fir, because as you'll be aware, there's been a lot of Douglas fir planted into northern Southland, both in plantation forests right up into the high country, and it's been extensively used for shelter belts and amenity plantings in the plains below the vulnerable hill country. So there's a massive seed source of other species that have the potential to become wilding problems such as we've got at Mid Dome. So the Trust obviously would like to think when Mid Dome's finished that its work will be complete. It doesn't want to find in 5 years' time there's a whole lot of new Mid Domes in South and that are going to require a similar sort of approach. So it's very supportive of the proposal to include wilding conifers as a new class of pest in the proposed plan. And I think I've explained the reasons why the Trust is supportive of this. Now, we realise that other regions of New Zealand face the same sorts of issues. And again, we believe that this new class of pest, if it and the objective for it, which is to reduce the geographic extent within a designated Southland wild and conifer high-risk area, the map shows the area. So these rules won't apply over all of Southland, only in those parts of Southland that have been designated as high-risk areas. And that includes really the high country of northern Southland. Interestingly, Ministry of Prime Minister, you've done risk analysis which includes Fiordland as part of the risk area. And you might ask why, but in the very long term it's possible that some of those species could invade Fiordland. But right now we're focusing on the next probably 10 to 20 years where we see the problems are. And you could similarly, you could say there's parts of the southern parts of South, perhaps around the Catlins, the Hokanui's, where there are similar issues. But again, we've, from a trust perspective, we see that northern part of Southland, which includes Mid-Dome, as the major priority area. So we're pretty comfortable with the approach that's been taken. And it's not going to be of immediate value to the trust because we're not dealing with those species yet, although I will say there's a very small percentage of trees found at Mid-Dome which are Douglas fir, interestingly. It's probably only 1 or 2% of trees found there, but they're definitely getting onto Mid-Dome. But we're thinking about other parts of South, particularly the Takatimus, the Eyre Mountains, and going over to east, the Garvey Mountains, the Hector Mountains. There's potential for wilding to spread into those areas in the longer term. And so we also think that the objective of 345,000 hectares of land will be cleared of wilding conifers for the next 10 years or from the commencement of the plan is a very laudable objective. It's an ambitious one, but it means if you start now before there is a problem, then you won't have a major problem. You won't have another Mid-Dome in the future. So we believe that's a very positive and far-thinking, forward-thinking approach. The rules, I have to say, even I get quite confused by the number of rules here, and I noticed one or two of the other submitters have, thinking there might be some scope for rationalisation. But I was, in my former role, involved in the development of a national template or model for wilding conifer management, and I'm very aware of the problems that were encountered trying to come up with very clear-cut and simple rules that could be applied and that would not be able to be legally challenged. And as a result of a lot of work done by regional councils collectively, we came up with this sort of a format where you've got Plan Rule 15, which we call a beneficiary rule. So it's the owner of the land effectively receives a benefit from controlling wilder conifers on their own land. Post control, that makes sense. It's the exacerbated rules that are a bit more complicated, really, is where if you're a landowner and you're imposing wilder conifers on your neighbour, what sort of liability do you have for that? And I think that the boundary control rules, even the 200 metres, even though it's a bit minimal perhaps, but that's what we agreed we'd run with collectively, is certainly better than what we've currently got. So it actually does, it's a good step in terms of dealing with cross-boundary neighbour versus neighbour problems. What unfortunately it doesn't address is the issue created by planted forests or plantations, because they're defined quite clearly. If a tree is in a plantation, and that's legally defined, then it can't be classified as a wilding conifer. And as a consequence, at present, if you have a planted forest adjacent to a neighbour, and there is seed going from your forest onto your neighbour's land, you currently have no liability or accountability for that. Legally, I'm saying. We'd like to think that neighbours could, through goodwill and common sense, deal with those problems, but that doesn't always work, and that's where regulation becomes the sort of final say. So unfortunately, the rules as they've been proposed, whilst they go a good way toward addressing the issue, they're not able to deal with the planted forest. And obviously, there's been some politics behind that. Clearly, the forest owners don't want to be slapped with a rule that's going to impact on their operation, or to impose cost on them or liability. And there is some defence under the RMA through pre-existing use provisions, and even the Biosecurity Act doesn't make it possible to put in a clear rule, that a black and white rule, if you like, which makes you as the owner of the seed source responsible for the seed landing on your neighbour and imposing cost on them. So, by and large, the rules that have been proposed, we're very pleased to see them in. We think that they go a considerable way toward addressing the problem. But there will be issues, and I've been made aware of these in recent weeks where I've been looking at surviving conifer problems in other parts of New Zealand, where there are actual cases where established commercial forests are shedding seed onto neighbouring land, and the commercial owners of the forest are very reluctant to deal with the problem they're imposing on their high country sheep farm, the neighbour. And it looks like it's a bit stalemated at present, and the farmers are at a disadvantage. And clearly, the people concerned with that issue would like to have clear black and white rules, which unfortunately we don't seem to be able to have. And that's why we ask that that Environment Southland works proactively in future with other regional councils, central government agencies, industry sectors, community groups and stakeholders to seek amendments to legislation, and particularly to the National Environmental Standards for Plantation Forestry, to create a more equitable and certain legal framework to manage unwanted spread from planted forests. So I think we realise that we haven't got the complete solution, but we'd like the council to be aware that there is more work needs to be done in this area. And it may not be able to be done at this stage, but it needs to be considered in the next 3 to 5 years. And it will probably that will be precipitated by specific instances where particularly public money is being used to control trees at a site, and it's being reinvested by a commercial owned forest. But that hasn't happened to date, hasn't brought it in. So I think that's just an important proviso that the trust would raise. Happy with the progress that's been made, but aware that there's more work that's going to need to be done in the future. And again, that's something that council will need to commit some resources to in the future, to improving what we've currently got, or what we hope we'll get anyway. I did look at the proposed wild and conifer high risk areas, and we are a little concerned. If you look at the map that's up there, that there's a lot of land upwind of these vulnerable areas, which contains plantation forests, shelter belts, amenity trees, which have the potential to spread into those red areas. And currently, we don't really have any legal ways of dealing with those seed sources. It might have been possible by including more farmland in those areas to allow some of those rules to apply. But the boundaries that we see there are essentially the vulnerable high country land, not the actual sources at the base. And I guess there are legal and political and social issues around that, but again, that needs to be considered, because to protect those red areas, you also have to be able to deal with seed sources at the bottom of the hills that are going to get blown up there. So, that is a concern, and we don't unfortunately have any answers for the council on that one. Currently, it seems, due to the limitations of legislation, rules for wild and conifers cannot be made right now to manage these high-risk conifer seed sources on developed land. And again, the Trust is unable to suggest a solution to this other than to seek changes in the law as requested. The other issue that we raise is that it's interesting to note that the big gaps in that red area generally relate to large areas of beech forest. And I guess there's been a view that, and certainly there's never been any documented examples where wild and conifers or conifers have actually spread into beech forest. However, I think there's growing evidence in other parts of New Zealand, Otago, Nelson, other places, where Douglas fir, for example, is getting into light wells in beech forest where the trees fall down. And there's a view expressed by some that eventually those Douglas fir could grow right up through the beech forest and overtop it. So the Trust feels it would be very helpful to include those beech forests within the red areas, within the wild and conifer risk areas, because whilst there's not a recognised issue today, it is likely in future, as more and more seed gets shed onto that country, that some of it will take hold, and it can potentially invade the beech forest. So we'd like the panel to consider that. So the trust requests the Environment South to consider including into the proposed Southern Bonn and Conifer high risk area those native forests currently adjacent to or surrounded by it. So that really summarises the issues that Lipdone Trust would like to raise. And we'd like to thank Environment South for the work it's done in supporting management of wild conifers in the region and the excellent progress that's being made through the regional pest management proposal which you have in front of us now. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for the good work you're doing on behalf of the Trust. That's excellent. I'm sure there's a few questions. So I'll start on my left with Muriel, if she's got any questions.
Kia ora, Richard. It's been a long, hard slog for the Trust and the wilding. We used to call them wilding pines at the start, didn't we? I'm just interested in the 200 metre buffer where, you know, forestry are meant to be responsible for that. Where was that 200 metres sort of sorted out? Where did that come from?
I thought you might ask that question, and I have to say, I struggle to remember where that actual number came from, because it was developed by a group of people led by a very capable planner. And I think after looking at all the options and listening to the fours and the gates, they decided that 200 metres was probably about the most you could get away with without causing some quite major pushback from the party. So there was a bit of a compromise there, because we all know that certain conifer seeds under the right conditions can move much further than 200 metres. Mm-hmm. But it's also true that you tend to get quite a dense fringe spread adjacent to a seed source. And that's usually quite evident up to 200 metres away, but after that they're scattered. So I guess it was a compromise that was picked. And ideally, if it was my decision, I would have made it considerably bigger. And I see that some of the submitters have suggested it could be quite meters. So I guess that's an open question, and that would be up to the panel and to the council to decide what might be more appropriate.
I'm very, very pleased that, you know, the plan is looking at seriously at the Douglas fir situation, you know, because we are aware that they are popping up in all sorts of places, very much unexpected places. So, thank you for also putting that in your submission. Thank you.
Thanks, Mira. Linda?
Not for me, thank you.
Brian?
Yes, thanks, Mitchell. I was quite interested in that. Can I ask the same question of Muriel? There was obviously some people asked her half a K, 500 metres, and I was sort of interested, you'd already answered that. But there's also that we are constrained, do you feel definitely the constraints of the NES does bring some peculiarities around this process, doesn't it?
Yes, it's a piece of statute that's probably going to need to be tested at some point. Currently the National Environmental Standards for Plantation Forestry sit over top, effectively overall, your RMA plans, and I think your biosecurity ones to a degree. However, I personally had a view that the National Environmental Standards were probably a little bit too much in favour of the industry, and that they probably need to be rebalanced at some point in the future. So I guess that's an open question.
The more we get involved in the process, the more of the realisation of where the two fit will be come out, hopefully in time, won't they?
I hope so. I mean, I go back to looking at what happened with the dairy industry 20 years ago, where they didn't really feel they didn't need to take account of what was leaving their property. But that's a very different world today. And I think the forest industry will probably come to the same realisation that we have to take some responsibility for the impact you impose on your neighbours. So I'm hoping that will move in that direction.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks.
Robert.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Richard. Just a question about shelter belts, and if there was a requirement for is to remove shelter belts which were potential seed sources. Would there be any kind of compensation offered?
Look, in Southland, the only time we could ask that, if and this is under the present regional pest management strategy, would be if it were a contournable Mugo shelter belt.
So there won't be many of those?
There would be very few.
Okay.
And we have dealt with one or two sites where there were, but they weren't, they were, yeah, they were amenity plantings, I think.
Okay.
Like at the Marrowell Bridge, there was quite a significant area of control taken out there a few years ago. But, yes, that's why I think we have some concern about shelter belts and so on in the, on the plains at the foot of the ranges, upwind of the ranges. That. And at present, there's no real solution to that other than the non-regulatory tools. And I think that we should, non-regulatory tools should be used as much as possible to try and persuade people who are perhaps replacing shelter belts that they put them back into species that are not going to be a problem. And that's going to be a good job for the land sustainability officers and people like that.
At the point of replacement.
Yes, I think that would be the thing.
Could I just ask one other thing that's more generic kind of question about the thinking of the trust, and I'm thinking about climate change and the Billion Trees project, and it kind of runs counter to this kind of things. I'm not asking you to explain the rationale, I'm just asking, has the trust discussed this issue of the conflict there?
Well, look, I think the first time the trust really had to deal with it was when the ETS regulations came out, and that effectively created an incentive before they were modified for landowners to let large areas of land just go into wilder conifers, because if they were able to get carbon credits for carbon growing on their land, then they, it's a very simple solution. But unfortunately, the downside to that was that when you were impacting on other values, that obviously environmental, economic values, and also and so eventually the government did actually change it back. So. Yeah, with climate change, you could argue letting landscapes grow into woody species, irrespective of what they are, is okay. But then there's also quite a strong case in the high country for encouraging the growth of snow tussock, for example. And there's reason to believe there's quite a lot of carbon capture in the soil in particular under tall tussock. And they're very good at capturing and holding water. So, you know, there are fours and against, and I think that that argument probably got a bit to run. But the Trust certainly is mindful of those issues, yes.
Okay. Thank you for that.
I've got a couple of points that I'd like to see clarified as in relation to the mid-dome situation. You made the comment that affected landowners will be faced with a maintenance liability after initial control and probably follow-up has been undertaken. I'm interested as to how much consultation the Trust has engaged on with those affected landowners as to what the expectation of follow-up maintenance might be.
Yeah. Well, at Mid-Dome, we're dealing with a relatively small number of landowners, and two properties at least have been handed back, and some dockland on the east side of Matara, and I think that that process has worked reasonably smoothly. But I would certainly agree that the Trust is aware of it, the need to keep talking to the remaining landowners on the west side of the Matara, that within 10 years is a good probability that they will be responsible for whatever is left on that land. So you're right, the Trust is aware of the need to do that. It's probably a bit too focused on killing trees right now, but you're dead right, that's something that the Trust needs to consider carefully, is that communication process, that setting of expectations about the future.
Yep. And I guess as a corollary to that, does the Trust see that it becomes a Environment Southland responsibility then to monitor and enforce
Correct.
Compliance?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
That's how it's seen.
You have mentioned the NES for plantation forestry requirements. We've still got quite a bit of work to do on this, but I'm expectant that the pest agent rule will apply to that plantation forestry situation, and hopefully that will give adequate powers to ensure that plantation forestry owners do meet their obligations, albeit within the constraints that we can construct a rule, like within that 200 metres or 500 metres, whatever that boundary, good neighbour boundary rule ends up comprising. Another point of clarification is, how dependent is the Trust's funding model rely on Environment Southland? And that's really probably for my information.
Well, look, the trust has been supported by Environment Southland right from the beginning. And the council has made a very generous lump sum grant when the trust was formed, along with Lynn's. And subsequently, it's provided funding to the tune of about $50,000 a year, every year, to the trust. In addition to that, it's made a significant contribution in kind by supporting the trust through its administration, and general administrative support, banking and so on. So the trust is very grateful for the support that it's received from the Environment Southland over the last decade.
But you are looking for a sizable input from the National Conifer Program. Okay, any other later questions? Thanks, Richard. Appreciate your time and effort in putting that together for a very significant program for Southland. Thank you. We're almost 2:30 and that's our first session after lunch concluded. So I'll adjourn proceedings at this stage and reconvene at 3:30. All good?
Next committee.